Very well. Good evening, dear friends. Thank you so much for joining us once again to another Gnostic Lab for practical application. And today, what do you say if we dedicate some time to have a conversation about how to solve problems? Because problems, the thing about problems is that some of them are a little easy and some of them are perhaps a little bit more challenging. The one thing that is common for all of us when it comes to problems is, number one, that we all have them, and number two, problems do not discriminate. They don't care about your height or your level of experience. Problems certainly do not care about what is your financial situation or whether you are an earner of many academic degrees or not. As a matter of fact, we have seen, and the experience shows, that the more intellectually inclined you are, the more complicated solving problems becomes. Now, we're not going to get here into any conversations about the Dunning-Kruger effect, for those of you who are familiar with the works of Dunning and Kruger, but we intend to share with you some basic and fundamental things that we must do if we indeed would like to solve problems. And we must do this because problems are certainly the essence of our lives. The fact is that if we say that life is problems, we would not be mistaken. And we all have them. And because we all have them, we all have to learn how is it that we can handle them. So before all, we must learn to solve our problems in a way that is intelligent. Now, this is a challenge perhaps to explain, and also a challenge even for us to grasp. Because when we speak about solving our problems intelligently, we immediately tend to rationalize that and think that we must be intellectual to solve our problems. People say, you must use your head. But how many times have you not found yourself dealing with matters of the heart? And how many more times have you not noticed that the mind knows nothing about the matters of the heart? You see, the head cannot solve those things that belong to that cardiac center. We can't. And yet, we try to force our intellect to get in there and look at options and look at varying conditions, changing variables, look for advice, seek for recommendations so that the problems can be solved. And the more information we tend to get from others, as you may have already experienced, it only adds to the confusion. Because ultimately, whenever we are asking somebody else for advice on how to solve our problems, people have no other option than give you their solution based on their own conditioning. So if you speak to somebody who is very prone to anger and you're having a problem with somebody else, it is likely that they would ask you to be aggressive, to be very assertive, to stand your ground, to tell it like it is. And maybe that's not what's necessary. Maybe what is needed is a little bit more compassion on your part. So to solve our problems intelligently, that means that we must learn to apply the right tools at the right time. We need to apply the right intensity to the right level of problem. Just like when we are dealing with medication, we must give onto the problem the right dose of antidote. Because if we give too much, well, the words of the great master Paracelsus, they apply here. Everything is toxic and nothing is toxic. It all depends on the dose that is administered. So we have to learn to solve our problems intelligently. The right amount of effort, the right amount of consideration, the right amount of intensity, the right amount of engagement. Because anything beyond what is necessary and sufficient ends up becoming wasteful. And because we are relying on our own source of power, which is our creative force, well, the more we waste, The more we drain that, the more worn out we find ourselves at the end of the day, the more difficult it is to recover after what is meant to be a good night's sleep. So, solving problems, let's do that intelligently. And it does not matter what type of problem it is, because today we have problems that are coming in all kinds of directions. We have problems that could be of a social kind. And those, there's plenty of abundance of those. We come across those every day. All we have to do is look a little bit in the comment section of any Instagram feed, any Twitter feed, of any Facebook wall. It doesn't matter. We see problems all of the time. And now that we have said that, evidently, we find plenty of political problems lingering around these days, whether at a personal level or whether it is of people internally against the community or against their place of work or against what they call the system, against the man. You see, we have those problems. And we have to say as well, there are religious problems. And these are of very peculiar interest to any sincere Gnostic student, because it is so common to see that as people come and go through these studies, the moment that they start nourishing themselves with the Gnostic philosophy, the moment they start receiving the core knowledge of the Gnostic wisdom, they start looking at other people from other groups and other religions with some degree of disdain, looking over the shoulder, making comparisons of what they say, stating how is it that they should behave, etc. So even on our religious, from a religious point of view, we find ourselves sometimes dipping our feet in problems. And of course, family-related problems, financial problems, issues with the economy, and in the worst of cases, meal insecurities, homelessness, illness. You see? Life is problems. And the thing is that we have the bad habit of becoming identified with our problems. And the moment that we become identified, you have heard this before so many times, we become identified with the problem, we fascinate with the problem and the many considerations and conditioning that we carry behind, and before we realize, we are deep into the sleep of the consciousness. And the sleepiest we get, the more we suffer, the more incapable we become to deal with the problem itself. So if we are going to do something to solve our problems, we have to get out of the sleep of our consciousness. So that means we cannot be fascinated with the problem itself. And what that means is that we cannot identify with the problem. Just think about those problems that are of a moral nature. Moral problems. They are responsible for so many illness. They are responsible for so much suffering. In many cases, how many people have not lost their lives because of moral problems? And these moral problems, they come in many different kinds of types. But at the core, many of them share common attributes. Things like shame, attachments, psychological dependencies. If, for example, your significant other, your wife, your husband, if they came to you and today they said, I want a divorce, it is likely that that would be so shocking that you would feel devastated. And depending on the many fears and conditioning that we have, we could find ourselves begging in deep propitiation, don't leave. Don't do this to me. Of course, we have already heard the five different stages of loss that people tend to go. There is negation. At some point, there is some kind of acceptance. And at some point, we try to dig ourselves out of that hole. But nevertheless, the scar of that moral problem is there. So if instead of identifying with that, if instead of fascinating with that, wondering if I am a good person or a bad person, or how can this happen to me, and what's going to happen to us, and who's going to take care of this, and worrying more about so many other things that have not come into play yet, if we for a second took a look at our self-considerations, if we took a look at our self-love, if we took a look at our fears, we would find so many different psychological aggregates that if we made an effort to comprehend them, and through the intervention of that power superior to the mind, which is our Divine Mother, we eliminated them, somebody could come to you and say, I want a divorce. And you would say, no problem. And you would allow them just to continue flowing through life. And perhaps, rather than see the misery, you would be able to see some opportunities. You would perhaps find that through a shock like that, you could be making a change into a superior level of being. You see? Because things are not always what they seem. So we become identified with our problems, and then we become the problem. And when that happens, then we start resisting it. We fight it. We don't like it. And we always resist it because the mind does not know anything else other than make comparisons. And the more you observe the transactions that take place within your mind, the more you're going to come to realize that the mind is always looking for a trade-off. What is going to hurt less? Let's change that perspective for a second. What is going to give me the most pleasure out of this next decision? This is all that the mind is doing. And every time that the mind is seeking for that alternative that gives you the most pleasure, the most perceived happiness, in reality, there are aspects of fear that are controlling all of that mental movement. And it may not seem like fear at first, because we have been so conditioned to think that fear is that thing that we see in those Hollywood movies. You see, the fear of the young damsel who is running in the darkness of the night through some kind of forest, just fleeing away from that creature, and she is so terrified that she always stumbles and falls. You see, it's not that fear. Because fear, it comes to us in many different degrees. There are people who are afraid of getting their blood drawn. There are people who are terrified of having a crucial conversation with somebody. And in that same light, as we continue looking into the lesser degrees of fear, there are people who just will not eat rice unless somebody adds salt to the rice, because having rice without salt and condiment is like, ugh, I don't want to experience that. So it's always a refusal to some kind of experience. Now, we're not saying that fear is always bad. It has served a good purpose to help protect the physical body. But we must be mindful of all of those reactions. So if we're constantly resisting things, if we're constantly pushing back, that requires a lot of our creative power to exercise that mental resistance. And at the same time, in the meantime, with all of that worriness and all those preoccupations, we can see that our emotional center, the only thing that it can do is make projections of inferior emotions. And after much conditioning, well, we start behaving in ways that become very predictable. And those of us who have become really good at repeating the same patterns over and over again, well, some people may refer to us as Debbie Downers, because we always tend to see the wrong or the darkness of things. So we must make an effort to not resist. We must make an effort to not deny the problem. The problem is what it is. We have to make sure that we start finding what are the reasons behind the problem. What are the causes behind the problem itself? We don't have to be trying to look for ways to justify the problem, to be able to dress up the problem in some kind of a ornamental pedestal so that we can go and share it with somebody else so that they don't see that we have anything to do with it. That is not it. Friends, for as long as we continue moving forward, not being satisfied with what we have, for as long as we continue living our lives not satisfied with what we do, we're going to continue moving forward, not being satisfied with our level of being. And that creates an internal problem, because our level of being is perhaps similar to what some people would refer to as our level of morality. And now that we're here receiving these lectures, knowing that we have a magnetic center that is active and that is gravitating by affinity to this particular source of teaching, we have to make sure that we are accepting of our level of being, because our consciousness is the one that is active seeking to make that change. And negating our level of being is indeed undermining the efforts of the consciousness itself. So for us to deal with problems, how is it that we not resist them? How is it that we can accept them? How is it that we can avoid being around justifying or explaining them or calling them something different or just pointing the finger? Well, we have to start by calming the three centers of the human machine. And we have already learned throughout our many other practices, how is it that we can relax our physical body? And we have to start somewhere, so why not start through the physical body itself? And by now, you know very well how to do the practice of the gnomes. You have already gone through many cycles of that visualization where we relax the physical body by using our objective imagination and seeing that the body is populated by an infinite amount of little gnomes. And as you let those gnomes walk out the soles of your feet, you slowly start feeling that relaxation moving upwards into your body. From your feet into your ankles, to your calves, your knees, your hips, your chest, your shoulders, your head, to the point where your physical body is completely relaxed. And even more than that, we have also encouraged you many times to be very watchful of those sensations in your physical body when you have achieved that deep state of relaxation, because you can always invoke it. You can always ask of your innermost to bring you back that find that last state of relaxation that you just experienced. Because you see, we have to renew those states of relaxation every so often. And just consider for a second. If you are facing a problem, and at that moment you're capable of maintaining enough remembrance of self that you internally can invoke of your innermost and ask of your innermost to bring back into your physicality that last state of relaxation, how much better would you not be able to deal with the problem if you are there contemplating it, perceiving it, instead of being all tensed up with your white knuckles and grinding your teeth? Certainly, the difference would be significant. And once we relax our physical body, we have to strive to relax the mind. And to relax the mind, we have done plenty of previous Gnostic labs where we have shared many mantras, words of power, that are very useful to bring tranquility into the mind. The most common mantra, and everybody knows this one, is the mantra Om. It is a beautiful mantra that allows for the vibration of the heart center, that heart chakra, and bring it back into harmony. But there are also other beautiful mantras. Mantras like Om Masi Padme Hum, which means, O God in me. There is another beautiful mantra that is called Gate, a mantra that was given by Amitabha, that manifestation of God that exists within the crown of life, to a Buddhist monk who was fighting his way through a snowstorm. And in his suffering, he could not take the suffering anymore, and he decided to just sit down and meditate and focus all of his willpower and objective imagination into Amitabha. And Amitabha appeared to him in a vision and gave him the mantra Gate so that he could liberate himself from the suffering. Because that is indeed what Gate means. It means liberation. So as we relax our physical body, as we start bringing tranquility into the mind by chanting Om, by chanting Gate, Gate, or by chanting the mantra Om Masi Padme Hum. As soon as those two centers start vibrating in harmony, the third one, which is the emotional center, it will naturally come to start vibrating in harmony as well. And as we do that, before long we find that we are in a better condition. The moment that we achieve that level of tranquility, it becomes a lot easier to find the potential solutions. It becomes a lot easier to make ourselves more open for those difficult conversations, to handle those difficult moments in ways that are indeed more intelligent. So now that we know that, knowing that we must be on a state of relaxation so that we can truly listen, not only listen to what is happening outside, but to also listen and receive the voice of the innermost, we must ask ourselves, what are those principal factors that bring our peace to an end? Because we have come to confuse peace with many other things that have nothing to do with peace. You see, for the most part, people tend to believe that peace means do not interfere in my matters, or leave me alone, or do not interrupt me. And for them, well, that is peace. So for as long as they can keep playing with their phone and nobody is interrupting their fantasy, their daydreaming, well, they think that they are at peace. And this is why so many of us parents are seen so many times with their phones, and the moment a child comes around and says, please give me something to eat, no, we do it, and we don't necessarily do it with the most love, because we have just been interrupted out of our daydreaming from playing with our phone. You see, they interrupted our fantasy. So we have to look, what is the principal factor that brings our peace to an end? And the reason for that is dual. Because the moment that we start seeing what those factors are, we start becoming more capable managing them. You see, just like when you're driving your car and you know that if you get into the incorrect lane, you can create a problem for you and somebody else. So you take the right measures to stay on the right lane. Well, the same thing happens when we can see what are these principal factors that as they come to us, that they can bring our peace to an end. As you see them, you can navigate them easier. It is as if you were girding yourself with arms of light to be able to move forward with the winds and against the winds. And by the way, those are not our words. That is one of those beautiful transcendental axioms from the great mysteries. We have to be able to see, what is that internal contradiction? What is that objection that we are carrying within that is bringing about our internal conflict? And in many problems, it would be that there is a self-imposed consideration, that you are fearful of being considered a bad person. It's not easy for many of us to be able to manage that well. You know, the moment that somebody puts into question the quality of person that we are, that can feel a little devastating. But then there are the words of the great Thomas of Kempis, the one who wrote the book, The Imitation of the Christ, where he said, it doesn't matter what people say or don't say about me, because at the end, I am always what I am. We have to be able to find out what is that source of objections that we have within that are bringing about the internal conflict. If it is not the fear of being considered a bad person, is it some kind of shame? Is it some self-consideration? Is it an aspect of pride? Is it something interfering with your ambitions? Ambitions are all those things that we strive for so that we can put ourselves in on a better condition than somebody else, you see? Are the aspects of our greed, that voracious appetite of having things and experiencing things? Or has somebody brought to light our envy? The enmity and the ill will that we place upon others when we see them succeeding, and we would like to be the one succeeding because we think that we deserve it. We have to learn to see what are those contradictions, because at the root of those contradictions, what we find is our very own aggregates. At the source of our objections, we find our own fears, our own desires. And as we continue to observe this, we can see that the source of our conflicts is our constant state of affirmation and negation. It is our constant state of comparison. It is our inability to reconcile the opposites. And in the Hermetic tradition, one of the seven great mysteries of manifestation of the great Hermes Trismegistus is the principle of polarity. And it says that everything has its opposites. And it also says that we must reconcile the opposites. That reconciliation, of course, needs to happen within. So we need to identify what is the source of our contradiction. And we will come to see that what appears to be the big deal that somebody else has created for us, it is just the manifestation of something that perhaps has repeated itself many other times in our life, but at lesser degrees of severity. We may be able to find that at the source of our contradiction, there is an insecurity, there is a fear. And as we work to resolve that, then solving the problem becomes an exercise in good courage. Because then we're no longer afraid of it coming out to light. Yeah, the problem happens because we have lied. Then it really does not matter that much to us that if it comes to light that the problem has happened because of our own indiscretions, because of our own mistakes and our own wrongdoing. And when we then start taking steps in that direction, the problem by itself starts dissolving. So this is how we can learn to solve our problems. This is what it means to solve our problems in a way that is intelligent. So for the purposes of our Gnostic lab tonight, let's go ahead, and for those of you who may have not experienced it yet, let's go ahead and relax our physical body. And after we do the relaxation, we will chant a mantra. Tonight we will chant the mantra, Om Masi Padme Jom. Again, that mantra means, O God in me. It's a very rough translation, but you get it. And after we have done this, well, we will bring you back into this current level of awareness. And now that you would have a little bit more practice doing those things, the moment that you see that you have to go in and address some problems, you will then know with much more certainty how to relax your body, how to calm your mind, so that you can bring about that calmness in your emotional center, and that you can then focus of your creative power in ways that are edifying and essentially dignifying, and not just to resist the problem, to deny it, to justify it, to negate it. So let's go ahead and sit comfortably. We invite you to sit with your feet flat on the floor. Make sure that you have your hands resting comfortably on your thighs, Those of you who are fortunate and stretchy enough to sit in the lotus posture, by all means, go ahead and do that. The rest of us, it is perfectly fine if we sit comfortably on a chair with our spine as vertical as we can make it. Just make sure that our neck and our head are in a straight line, aligned with our spine. And let's take a deep breath in. 1, 2. 1, 2. We're going to invite you to open yourself to that which is known. Give yourself an opportunity to do this, put this into practice in a new unit of time. Let's not forget that we take out of these exercises the same things that we bring into them. We bring alert novelty and alert perception. We bring openness. We tend to leave with our hands full of experience, wisdom, opportunities. When we come with skepticism, judgments, with doubt, we usually leave empty-handed. So as we give ourselves this new opportunity, let's be aware of the sensation of the floor on our feet. And with that, let's invoke our innermost. And as we seek to at some point become a fine and delicate instrument at the service of our being, we can say, Divine Father, Father of mine, you who are my true being, you who are my internal God, we ask of you with our soul and our heart that you allow us to achieve a deep state of physical relaxation. We ask that you guide us through this practice so that we can achieve a profound, deep state of mental relaxation as well. And through the experience, that you build our level of certainty on how well we can do this so that we can put it to use during the good times and through the harsh times. We ask of your guidance, and we ask of your wisdom. And we ask all of this in your gentle name. So be it. With that, let's use our objective imagination and use that objective imagination, which is your faculty of clairvoyance, and see that your body is populated by an infinite amount of little gnomes. And let these gnomes walk out the soles of your feet one by one. And as you observe them, you will feel that immediately there is a gentle relaxation that goes from your feet into your ankles, into your calves. And as you continue to observe them, you can see that relaxation going from your knees into your thighs. All the way up to your hips. And with that, we immediately start experiencing a very subtle sensation in our legs. It is a very gentle vibration, but we don't identify with it. We only experience it with gratitude. As that relaxation reaches our hips, we continue observing those little gnomes walking out the soles of our feet. And we slowly allow that gentle relaxation to disperse itself around our abdomen. And as we continue breathing in through our nose, out through our nose, with every exhalation, we allow to release any worries or any preoccupations that may have been affecting our internal organs. Every exhalation, we let go of all those worries that may be affecting our spleen. Our spleen is a remarkable organ because not only it is the foundation of our vital body, but on an esoteric level, the spleen is the organ responsible of absorbing a very subtle rays of the sun. And these subtle rays that in many ancient cultures were referred to as christic light, at the time our physical body goes to sleep, the spleen helps release all of that christic force into the body itself so that the body can recuperate, regenerate itself. With every exhalation, we let go all of those worries that are induced and generating so many inferior emotions in us. Because all those affect our liver. Our liver not only helps in the processes of digestion of the food that we eat, it also participates on the digestion of the impressions that we receive. Liver is the foundation of our astral body. With every exhalation, we let go of our resentments, of our angers. As they affect our pancreas, our pancreas is the organ in our body that helps us deal with sugars. It takes care of all the sweet stuff. And we're certainly affected with our sourness, with the imperil that we release every time that we start harboring resentments and anger. So let's continue to observe these little gnomes walking out the soles of our feet. And then with every exhalation, as they walk out, we feel that our internal organs are now more relaxed. You may even feel that your exhalation is now deeper. So let's allow for that relaxation to expand into our lungs, into our heart, and to continue rising just like a gentle cloud until it reaches our shoulders. From there, see that relaxation cascading down into your elbows, your wrists, your hands, and out of your body through the tips of your fingers. This moment, our awareness has increased, and it is easier to perceive that gentle vibration that inundates all of the physical body. But we don't identify with it. We experience it in gratefulness. As we bring our attention back to those little gnomes, we can feel that relaxation extending itself up our neck, and we relax the muscles in our jaw, we relax our tongue, our lips, we relax our eyes, our eyelids. We relax our forehead and we let go of that frown. We even relax the space that is there behind our ears and allow that relaxation to continue climbing and going slowly all the way up to the very crown of our head. as you make use of your objective imagination, which again is your faculty of clairvoyance. Make an effort to see yourself as if you were transparent. And as you do that, it is likely that you will perceive that transparency on a very light and gentle hue of the color blue. That is not by coincidence. Blue is indeed the color of love. Blue is the color of the Father. And be aware of the sensations in your body. And remember, you can ask your innermost to invoke for you this state of relaxation at any given moment. And in this state, let's chant together the mantra Om Masi Padme Jom. Jo. As we bring our body and our mind into a deeper state of relaxation, you can immediately notice how your emotional center also responds favorably. It is at this time that we ask for the divine intervention of our innermost, so that through His wisdom that we can discover the source of our objections, the source of our contradictions, but most of all, that we can see them in contemplation, that we can be critical in the dissection of our own aggregates, because it is through observation and comprehension that we can invoke of the power of our Divine Mother, and we can ask her to eliminate for us that psychological aggregate that we have comprehended. And we don't need a magical prayer for that. All that we need is to ask with infinite love, just like a child asks their own mother for any help. So dear friends, now that we're here, let's go ahead and wiggle our toes, wiggle our fingers. Come back to this present moment and open your eyes. And this has been our practice tonight on how is it that we can solve problems. So dear friends, thank you so much for joining us this evening, and may all beings be happy.